Hello, and welcome to Required Reading, the podcast that revisits the most impactful books from our childhood. I'm your host, Erin Bowles. I am a writer, comedian, and I don't think I've said this. I am a mug collector. Our guest today is Corinne Diemer, who is a New York-based comedian and camera assistant. They're in love with physical comedy and making friends. Before New York, they were horsing around in North Carolina, where I fell in love with them working on Welcome to Flatch. And they request that you please send cutesy otter pics to at Corinne Diemer on Instagram. That's CORRYNDIEMER. Hi.
Do it. Hi.
Our book today, modern American folklore. Like, I don't, it's so good.
Truly.
From 1998, Holes by Lewis Sacker. We had a book by this author previously, and I pronounced it Satcher, and I just found out that that is wrong. I think the movie also looms large. The cover alone is iconic.
Truly.
But the guy, I just realized, I've thought for 20 years that the guy is facing straight forward, and his ear is his other eye. And I just realized he's looking at profile. And
He's doing the side eye right now.
exactly.
Yeah, he's
That's
looking
where
back.
it is a Newbery Award winner. I mean, it's won so many awards. But Corinne, what's your
Yeah.
story with this book? How did it come into your life?
Yeah, so I think it's really important to note that like one thing my mom did really right as a mom is she took us to the library a lot. Or me specifically, I'll be honest, I don't remember my sister really being there. Maybe she
Is
was
your
out with
sister
friends.
older or younger?
Yeah, she's older. She's got like 3.5 years on me. But I do remember going to the library a lot as a little kid, like 6 to 8, like Junie B. Jones sort of age range.
No one's requested that so far. I have to write that down.
Oh, the whole series, dude. Like, it was so cool. Like, every time I finished, I'd be like, we have to go back to the library. And I'd always have to bring like nickels with me because I am such a slow reader. Like we were always turning in books late. Not because like I wasn't reading them or forgetting about them. I just read very slowly. But yeah, just a quick shout out to mom for taking us to the library. That was really sweet because she's gonna play later on in this story. So Holes, I probably read it when I was in about third grade, which I looked up what the average like age range is, and it like suggests fifth grade. So shout out to me for being a genius reading it in third grade. The reason that I wanted to read it was because, if you know, in 2003, when Corinne Diemer was in third grade, Holes the movie came out. And I have always been the kind of person that likes to read the book before I see the movie because I do it as like a reward system. You read the book, you've earned the reward of watching the movie. So
I love
I,
that.
yeah. So I saw the trailer for it, was absolutely obsessed with Shia LaBeouf at the time, who wasn't. And it was like, wow, I need this book. So I kept begging my mom, please, like, we have to go to the library. We have to go to the library. Because at this point in my life, it's somewhere in the age gap of 6 to 8 to like 10 to 11, somewhere in there, I stopped going to the library because I was like too cool. At some point, I just like my whole life was like soccer and playing tag. So I stopped going to the library as much. And I like begged my mom. I was like, we have to go back to the library because I hadn't been so long. And I remember we were walking home from school, like the middle school, probably like a 10, 15-minute walk from my house. So it was very cute. Like my mom would always be there at the steps. I walk down, walk home. And I remember one day she's like, I got you something. And I was like, oh my gosh, what is it? She's like, I don't know, maybe something you've been bugging me about. I'm like, oh, glasses. I, for some reason, really wanted glasses. I wanted to be just like my older sister. I didn't need them at the time, but I do now. Yeah, I just really wanted to be like my older sister. I really want some glasses. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to go home and I'm going to have glasses. So stoked. I get home. She gives me Holes. And it was just like such a sweet, I was like, over the moon, beyond stoked because like Holes is way cooler than a pair of glasses that I don't actually need to see anything. So I had a sleepover with a friend of mine, and I remember right when Stanley and Zero are, excuse me, let me call him Hector. I feel like put some respect on Hector's name. When Stanley and Hector are just about to get to God's thumb, that's where I was at in the book when I had this sleepover. And like, As someone, I'm sure you read the reread the book right before this podcast.
I had never read the book.
You never read it? Oh my gosh. Well, were
I had
you
never
able to
read
put
it.
the book down when they were at God's thumb?
Well, so I have seen the movie, so which was a helpful template. I'll say it later. This book reads so fast, and there's a section at the back of mine that I did not read, but is Lewis Sachar talking about he wrote the screenplay and what that process was like. It's very sweet. It's like, this is really different, and I don't know how to do this. And you would not know, first off, that he did not write a screenplay before that. And this is so perfect for a movie. The pacing, the structure, it is a tight little story.
Like, no, seriously, there's so much tension there that like I have to take the book with me to the sleepover. And then the entire time I'm like, go to sleep, just go to sleep, just go to sleep, like begging, like in my mind, begging my friend to go to sleep so I can whip out my book and finish it because I was so stoked. I stayed up like, again, slow reader. I stayed up for like maybe an hour or two after she had gone to bed, just like cooking through these pages because I needed to know what happens. And circling back to what you were saying about the movie, I also had to watch the movie like 2 days ago because I was like, you got to do both, right? You
Oh my
can't read
God.
wholes and then not just follow it up with a movie reward. So I'm watching it. And I had the same thoughts about what you just said. So I didn't realize that the author is the same person who wrote the screenplay, so Lewis Sachar. When I saw that come up on the screen, I was like, this makes so much sense because the movie is spot on, down to the same dialogue. Like, it's so spot on. It was chef's kiss, honestly. But what you just said about it being like very impressive that Lewis Sachar had never written a screenplay before, I didn't know that. So this is new information and it's blowing my mind because I feel like the pacing and the storytelling within the movie is so like that's standard, that's goals. Like, if I'm writing a movie, that's what I want to achieve.
This is like, I would, if I were a professor teaching screenwriting, I would, like, when I took script analysis in college, our midterm was just watch Gravity in class and write down like the Save the Cat structure. I would do that with holes. It's so, I mean, like you said, it's so good.
Yeah, I was like taking mental notes while watching it. And then I was like, wait, no, the podcast is about the book, not the movie. Don't talk about the amazing, fucking amazing
No, we have
transitions.
to. We have to talk about the movie. We're movie people.
It was like, honestly, their use of like slow motion and fast motion to like propel their storytelling. I was like, wait, whose choice was this? Because it's a fantastic choice. And it's such an early 2000s choice too. Like, so perfect for the time. But yeah, some of those beginning transitions, like getting bit by the rattlesnake at the very beginning, and like the entire screen fades to white, you see the sky, and then all of a sudden the shoes are coming from the sky transition. We're present day, like, well, I mean, not present day, but now we are present day, but we're with
Beginning of the
Stanley.
story,
Yeah, we're with Stanley instead of Barfbag. I was like, this is beautiful. I love it already.
Last night I saw a screening of Ella Enchanted, which is one of the, like, might have been my favorite movie when I was growing up. Definitely was the first movie I remember seeing in theaters. Not my first movie in theaters, which I have been told was Elmo and Grouchland. I feel proud of that. So just like, writing for children and doing this
Sure.
podcast is on my mind a lot. And both in Sachar's biography and the way he talks about writing, and in the articles like that I've seen of him actually talking about it, he writes with so much respect and like admiration for children. And it was so easy to like completely do this wrong as a film. And like there was something in either the article or the little tiny bit of it that I read in this book of the director just being like, I know he can do it. And he is the only person who can put in the heart that is what makes this movie or this book so good. And we did it for the Wayside episode, but a little bit of his background. He, I think, was going to law school and like wanted an easy college credit, so he volunteered to be like a teacher's aide for a semester in an elementary school, and he just like he loved it. He loved the kids, and he goes to law school, ends up working, I think, in a sweater factory somewhere in New England, and gets fired from it and starts writing what becomes Wayside School. And his wife, I read somewhere that the lawyer at the end, Miss Marengo, maybe his wife inspired Miss Marengo's character. And
She's
then
a
I,
badass, by the way.
she
She's
is.
such a
And
badass.
Oh my God. And so I was doing a little more research on them, and I found out how they met. Lewis Sacker, like all children's authors, get a lot of like fan mail, and he noticed that he's getting a lot from Texas and a lot from the same like classroom in Texas of kids saying, "Love your book, huge fans. Our teacher is really hot." So Lewis Sacker is like one day driving through Texas for some reason. He's like, "You know what? I'm here. Like, I'll go see this hot teacher and like say hi to all these kids." And so he goes and meets the teacher, says hi to the kids, and then meets the guidance counselor and says, "Oh, she's hot." And that's Carla. And they get married. And there's like a more direct book that she is said to have inspired. So I don't know which one, but it's probably both, because Carla Askew has to be this badass.
Right?
Like,
I'm curious now that you said that, because have you read, I'm so shocked beyond belief you have not read Holes. Obviously you have now, but there is a Holes sequel.
Yes, I
Small
forgot about that.
Steps.
But they have the first chapter in here. Yeah, it's
Word.
from Axel's perspective, X-ray's perspective.
It's actually from Armpit. Yeah, it's Armpit's.
Man.
X-Ray's in there though. X-Ray's like a
Yeah.
pretty heavily involved character, but it is Armpit's perspective. And I started listening to the audiobook, but there's a really badass mayor in this book, and her name is Cherry Lane. So I wonder if that could also be could be a little wifey action.
I love that. And even if it's not, I think he, I don't know, I can just tell he loves women and loves to respect
Oh,
women.
yeah.
I don't know where that came from, but I do believe it. I never read the book when I was young. I think mostly because here's another big drop. I had never seen the whole movie. I had seen a bunch of like seeing it in passing on like Disney or ABC Family.
Sure.
Movies were why I would read books, sort of in the reverse of you. Like, I would see the movie to be like, should I devote my time to reading this
Gotcha.
book? And also, like, are there girls in it? Was such a huge thing. I also had a weird disdain for Even Stevens. It was like, where I was just like, that's gross, and the girl is not fun.
She's
Also,
not.
in this Ostner article, I came back to it. He said he was inspired by the thought of the book came to him because he moved to Texas and he was just like so depressed with the hot summers and just the
Oof.
heat of it. One thing I really did love about him is that he says, and he said this elsewhere, when he's writing, he knows he's writing for kids. At the same time, he's writing something that he would want to read. And he goes, "I may tone down the language, write in shorter sentences so that it's easier to read. As long as it's not too depressing, and as long as there's hope and wit to it, I think a little mild torture is part of the fun." Oh, so when they were, the movie was a Disney movie. I'm so sorry. When the start of the article is like, how is Disney gonna sell a movie about kids in prison in the awful hot summer? This is a story about like the criminal justice system, and which is also amazing. Like, thank you, Lewis, for putting it in there. So, like, when they were advertising it, they had to keep a lot of like the plot under wraps. And something I remember so clearly was that I didn't like want to watch Holes, but that song, man, that's a great song. And to
Digging
this day,
up
I'm
them
like,
holes, dig it.
it is so
Absolutely.
good. I think it is like, I think, and obviously this is like a biased opinion, but I do think like we grew up in a golden age of Disney Channel. Like,
Yeah,
they were putting out some
absolutely.
really good stuff then, and we are biased because it was our time. But I think the top song, the best song that came out in that era was this one. And then, because I was thinking about this recently, I think Get Your Head in the Game comes in second. And what I love about both of those songs is that they create like percussion through non-traditional objects. So in Holes, they're
It's
digging
stomp.
actually.
It's stomp.
And yes, and in Get Your Head in the Game, it's the squeaks of the basketball court against the sneakers. And I just like, I don't know where I'm getting this, but I feel like there's an attitude sometimes of like, when you're making it for kids, it's somehow lesser, like you don't have to make it as good. And so like it's so heartening when like these things have like a lot of not only attention and money and things like that, but care put into them. But I didn't watch the whole movie beginning to end until about last year. And I think I had seen all the parts basically. There were like a couple little, little moments here and there, but they are so similar. They are almost identical. And it is like, I was sort of saying this in the intro, like, this is such. I just edited our Grapes of Wrath episode, and I do feel like they are so similar in terms of like incredible depictions of America and like timeless, inherent, deeply seated like myths, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
Oh, yeah.
the country doesn't, because it's only like 200 years old, I don't feel like we have a very strong like mythology to it. That's sort of like the founding fathers and then like
Sure.
and the cowboys, but I feel like this is a great, like, it's Wizard of Oz and this and Grapes of Wrath.
Yeah. The curse, it was such a tangible thing to me as a kid because at this point in my life, I was a huge Red Sox fan. And during this time period, who else was experiencing a massive curse?
Red
The Red
Sox.
Sox. The curse, the Red Sox curse. So it was very tangible to be like, yeah, that's exactly why we're losing baseball games. We're cursed. We can't win a World Series. Like, I get it, Stanley. You know, it was like a very like relatable thing, which is huge when I'm reading books. I love to be able to relate because otherwise, just less interested. But yeah, Holds was like a book that keeps you interested start to finish. Can you hear him playing or is it okay?
No, you're all good.
Okay. I got a little boy chasing a little ball.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, now he's talking.
Oh, hi there.
This
Is
is
he a
Duncan.
dachshund?
He's a dachshund mixed with a German shepherd.
Wow, he's beautiful, everybody.
Okay, good boy. Yeah, I just wanted you to say hi. We're going to talk about holes now.
Oh, I had a question about the film
Yeah.
because when I was watching it with my boyfriend, I pointed at Madame Zaroni and I was like, it's so cool that Eartha Kitt is like doing a kid's movie. Like, I always thought of it as like a made for TV movie, but it was not. It had a theatrical release. But I was like, that's so crazy. Eartha Kitt is here. And he's like, who? That's just Madame
That's
Zaroni.
Madame
So
Zeroni.
I need to know, like, a huge part of my life in my 20s is just like, was this normal? Was this normal? What does everyone know? So, did you know Eartha Kitt before this, or was this your introduction to her?
Absolutely, the introduction.
Wow. And do you
Yeah.
know her beyond?
No, she is Madame Zaroni.
Wow. She sings Santa Baby.
No way.
Yeah, she played Catwoman.
Wow.
She was like a movie star. Oh, she did Yzma and Emperor's New Groove.
Okay, I think I did know that because, like, no disrespect to her, they kind of look similar.
I mean,
Yeah.
I yeah, absolutely. And she was an amazing actress and like incredibly sexy. And I'm so excited about this, and I just haven't bought it because it's not at used bookstores. But there's like a biography of Eartha Kitt written by her daughter that's like about their life together, which
Cool.
she's just so good. She has a delicious way of talking and moving, and oh, I love it.
That's awesome. I'm glad to know that. Thank you for sharing.
She's so cool. She's so cool. But oh, do you have any like family legends? Like,
Oh, that's a good thought. So when we were kids, my uncle had us convinced for a very long time that he's a vampire. And it's because he has a really pointy like tooth right here, which is genetic. But yeah, he had us very convinced he's 100% a vampire. We had this crawl space in our home, so not like a full-blown basement, but like you had to crawl down there. And that's where the boogeyman was. And if we ever ran into like trouble with the boogeyman, we could call Uncle Vinny because Uncle Vinny's a vampire and he could take care of the boogeyman. Not our own father. Nope. Tom couldn't handle the boogeyman. We had to call Uncle Vinny.
Well, he has a special skill set. That's
Yeah, he's
so
a
wild.
vampire.
At some point, I like convinced myself that like the basement to the house I was very young in had like gaps between the stairs. So I had somehow convinced myself that if I was down there at night, ET would take his
Not
bony
E.T.
little hands in between and grab my ankles and pull
Yeah.
me in
I'm surprised
to
that never happened to you.
right.
It seems legit.
I could not watch that movie. Sorry, everybody.
I
That is a little booger man. I don't like that.
can't say that I have seen E.T.
I know that Reese's Pieces are a big part of it, and I love much love to Reese's. I don't like those things, so that's not going to keep me watching.
Let me tell you, and I've said this for years, the biggest thing I re like that I respect about you specifically is that you say Reese's Pieces. And I've been saying that for years.
Instead of Reese's?
Reese's Pieces makes me want
Yeah,
to punch someone.
that's true. But yeah, Reese's Pieces sounds like a euphemism.
I'm not about it. It belongs to someone named Reese. Those are their
Yeah,
pieces.
maybe a whole family, but the Reese's,
Yeah.
the pieces down there. Man, that calls to mind such a they live all on a suburb, but there's such story that
The
phrase.
Reese's, yeah,
Like,
there's, yeah. Yeah, I think those are my only real like family myths.
yeah. It's just like little facts rather than folklore. Then there are just like wild stories. Like when my dad's grandmother died, there was like a fancy family ring that was going to be buried with the grandmother. And one of the cousins or something came and took the ring off of the body during
No.
the funeral. And my grandfather was the like branch into this family. There is a screaming fight about this like family, not jewel, but jewel. And they have it out. And then my grandfather, it was my on my dad's side, takes the ring and plops it in my mom's hand. And like, that's it. And so that was her engagement ring.
Wow.
I think that's so fascinating. And it's interesting how a family remembers itself, because I wonder, like, also with the Yelnats, is like how many ones do we like not remember or something? And also Stanley Yelnats. Like, what a brain, Lewis. What a great idea.
Yeah,
I
having
love
it
it.
be spelled backwards being the same thing, genius.
It's like, why not? It's a little fanciful, and I think that like there is this like fairy tale element to it. I think in how like every it is so neat of a story. There's all these timelines and layers, and every single thing is connected, and it just makes it so magical. Like, if you aren't familiar with the book, Stanley's great great grandfather does a woman wrong, like breaks a promise, and it goes through generations of the family to reunite in the protagonist and the descendant of this older woman. And he finally like fulfills not the prophecy, but like the generation-long curse. It's so everything is so good. And like, I feel like even though it's a book about injustice, I think like everything, like the scales are all in the right place by the
Yeah.
end.
This is, there's something also so satisfying about saying no
Yes.
good, dirty, rotten, pig stealing great great grandfather. Like it hits so well.
It does.
Circling back to when we
Yeah.
were talking about the music, I don't know if you've lasted this long in the credits. Two incredible things about the movie credits is one, there's like an end credit scene, and it's Hector Zarroni sitting exactly where Madame Zarroni sits and saying her lines. It's
Oh.
very cute. And then following that, there's a soft rock cover of If Only, If Only. And it is the most 2000s music you will ever hear, but like a spectacular version. Because if you read the book, you know that the Latvian version of the song then gets edited to be like more Americanized. So there are technically multiple verses because it's sung different ways. So this song just like it actually like kind of hits, but for that time period. I would not listen to it now, but I heard it for the first time when I rewatched the movie. I was like, I have to watch the full credits because after working in the film industry, you've kind of sometimes you come to respect and you're like, man, I gotta like just read these people's names, then I'll never know or meet or anything. But I'm here just to be like, how many grips were on this movie? I need to know. So I'm like listening to this song, and then all of a sudden they get to the chorus and it's like, whoa, I know that.
Oh.
Yeah. And like also just like gorgeous repetition of that song being used, including I actually this is bad for me to not remember if it was in the book or not, but I do remember it being in the movie is when Hector reunites with his mom after using the fortune to pay for private investigators. And I was just like, dang, they really got me.
They got back. They found each
Yeah.
other again.
Yeah,
That,
it's so
like,
sweet.
it's so sweet. And we have to talk about it like head on, because we've touched on it. This book is about putting children in prison and doing not only manual labor, but like every facet of that camp and design and what they're doing, that's torture. Like,
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just like using them to do your own bidding. 'Cause
yeah.
do they actually believe that digging holes is building character? Probably not. The warden just wants what isn't hers, what isn't
Yes.
rightfully hers. She just wants the treasure, which like
Yeah.
shows how like greed really like leads to really bad behavior, right?
Yeah.
Like when you're greedy, when you're after that money, you'll do anything, including torture children. Lewis kind of like writes it out in the book to sh so well that like yes, they're corrupted by greed, but like they're defending themselves by being like these kids did something wrong, like they
Yeah.
deserve it because they're thieves. And they keep like Pendanski is so mean to the
Yeah.
kids, even though he's like kind of nice at times,
Yeah, he's supposed to be the nice one, like
right?
of the
It's
options.
complete psychological torture. Like he's like, tell me about your feelings, but also you're a thief and you deserve this, you stupid.
Exactly.
Like, oh, it sent me.
I found my copy in a little free library, and there are a lot of schools in my neighborhood. So inside the front cover, oops, it says Giselle Villalobos, room 7. She did not really annotate the book at all, except she's a drama queen. I love it. She has a blue heart written at the end of a chapter when the boys find the buried treasure and are about to escape, and suddenly a bright light was shining in his face. "Thank you," said the warden. "You boys have been a big help," and takes the treasure and traps them there. And it's probably, I mean, that's the like dark night of the soul. All hope is lost. And she puts a little heart there. I love her. If it's the same person,
I hope
but
so.
I was like, that's a storyteller right there. Or just messy. But I like the warden is such an icon, like the whole cast, but the warden specifically is such an iconic character. And no one, I mean, maybe they couldn't, it would be very different, but no one could do this like Sigourney Weaver.
Truly, truly. In fact, like the role I think was like made for her because everything she does is so perfect. Her attitude, her presence, the way that she like shuts the boys down. Excuse me? Oh, that line sends me every time. And it's like a multi, you know, that's a re repeated line because we love repetition. Yeah, Sigourney Weaver, hands down, fantastic.
I mean, and like a role that she was born to play and was born for her. They're just like, are there are not, there's nothing in the world that fits quite as well as those two. But I think there's so many incredible characters like that. Like I can't who's the I can't think of his name. Is it Sam who Kate Barlow is with?
Yep, I can fix
Sam.
that. Yeah, you can, Sam. When he says that about her broken heart, if that is not the goal for love, if that's not the epitome of a perfect partner,
Indeed.
Sam.
Bringing us
I
to
can
the
fix that.
other crazy part of this book,
Right. We have to talk about this.
Sam is murdered because he expresses interest in a white man and he's a black man. And I think the man who kills him is Sigourney Weaver's ancestor.
Yes,
Not,
Trout
yeah.
Walker. Trout Walker.
If there was ever a character who so needed to be named Trout.
They nailed it. It was Trout Walker. That's his name.
Lewis, like it's so good. But he is interested in the town school teacher. He has the attitude that she is his by rights. She is in love with the onion seller in town. He sees them kissing, and Sam dies. Sam is killed. And the passage was so astonishing because it was written sort of in a startlingly different kind of way. I can't find exactly it, but I'm going to keep scrolling. He said, like, these are the facts. Sam went out on the boat and
Right.
was shot. And the last line is something like, you decide who God really punished that day.
Yeah.
It's, oh, here, good job, me. These are the
Proud of you.
facts. The Walker boat smashed into Sam's boat. Sam was shot and killed in the water. Catherine Barlow was rescued against her wishes. When they returned to the shore, she saw Mary Lou's a donkey, Mary Lou's body lying on the ground. The donkey had been shot in the head. That all happened 110 years ago. Since then, not one drop of rain has fallen on Green Lake. You make the decision. Whom did God punish?
There's
And
so much to digest there,
yep.
right? So, like, first of all, racism because of the time period and because of the nation that we live in. Then you have like religion because of where this takes place and the time period and society. So there's like multiple layers here, and I feel like they do kind of go hand in hand, unfortunately. But the way that he touches on it in a children's book, I think is really important, 'cause he doesn't like really put his opinion. He just says, these are the facts, you decide, is such a strong thing. Like, because if we think about the way most things in society go, it's like children learning from their parents, and it's less learning and more like their parents being like, this is what you should believe in, this is what we do, rather than giving people the option. So knowing that this is going to reach a wide audience and giving them the option, like, these are the facts, you can decide how you feel about it, is really cool and really huge. And it plays very similarly in the book. And if you don't feel like a piece of crap when you see a dead donkey, the greatest donkey who has been said to live over 100 years old,
That's true.
Mary Lou did not deserve. Yeah, if you see that and you don't get upset, then you need to check in with yourself.
And then it like holds these two things at the same time. It talks about at one point early on when we're still in like the sort of setting the stage sequences at Camp Green Lake, he says Stanley was thankful that there were no racial problems. That as well as how children are being incarcerated with these incredible like iconic fairy tale elements. Like there's Bandit who's a woman, and there's buried treasure, and there's magic onions that keep you alive. And it's so incredibly satisfying. And I like it's something that I read and I'm like, I don't know how to ever write something like this.
I think that even if like he doesn't outwardly say it, Lewis definitely, as a writer, has a passion for talking about social injustices and bringing it to light for people at a young age. Because after reading Holes, I started, like I told you, listening to Small Steps, which follows Armpit's story. Armpit is one of the black characters, and maybe about like halfway through this book, he faces something that we hear about in the news almost every day, which is being racially profiled and being held down by a cop, because it's kind of bizarre that it takes place at a concert, but it takes place at a concert. He is looking, they're asking him for his to see his tickets. He goes to reach in his pocket for the tickets, and the cop feels threatened because they don't know what he's reaching for, so they tackle him to the ground. And the person that he's at the concert with is a younger white character that has cerebral palsy. So because of all of, like, the stress, she starts having a seizure.
Oh my
So
God.
with this kid on the ground, he's a high school kid. Like, it's follows Armpit right after the story, pretty much. They're harassing him and asking him what drugs did he give her.
Oh
And it's like, and
God.
he's like, no, I just need to get up to help her. Like, she's having a seizure. And that's when the mayor, who I told you, like, could possibly be Lewis's wife or have some of those qualities, like, put into that character, like, she steps in and, like, basically white savior fixes the moment, unfortunately. But like, I think the positivity and the awareness is there. Like, Lewis is definitely telling the audience, this is not okay, but this is what is happening. So it's another one of those, like, here are the facts. What do you think about it? So I think definitely as an author, he has that passion to bring that awareness. And I love that it's like children's books, because they're not going to teach you that in school, especially not in Texas.
It's some people read a lot of like almost exclusively nonfiction. And some people read a lot of fiction. And there's this sometimes idea that like if you're listening to fiction, you're not like learning something. And yet, I think the thing that I love so much about fiction, including this book, is it is so often a lesson in empathy in one way or another of understanding. And this for children, I think, and especially the sequel that you're describing, even though you are not in those positions of being in prison and being racially profiled, you are given a window to understand those things, to know that those things happen, and to sometimes feel it in your body. And that I think creates so much more. I mean, that's how things get better, is by community and like by understanding each other and finding the similarities. And like, it's so important that kids get those kind of messages.
Absolutely.
And like, and he does it so well. Like he said in that one interview, like the sentences are really simple, and it's a lot of like Stanley felt, Stanley felt, Stanley felt. Like not that I actually noticed like those two phrases, two words, but it puts you so directly in that character. It's not written in first person, but it almost is. It feels that way.
Yeah, it does feel that way. And like a lot of what Stanley goes through in a way, like as no relation to my life, but I was 100% relating to him. I think one thing that is different in the movie and book, which like I totally get, is that in the book, Stanley is overweight. He is a fat kid, and I grew up a fat kid, still I'm a fat kid. Represent. But there were so many things that happened to him, like having kids at school bully him, which thank God that didn't happen to me in that sort of capacity. Girls are different. It's more talk rather than rather than actual violence. But like, Stanley had his notebook thrown in the trash, and it was they were just picking on him because he was fat. And I think that for some reason, even though he wasn't a teacher or anything, like Lewis is able to get into the mind of children so well to where I was able to relate to a lot of the things Stanley went through, even though like my family has never like had a curse on them or been entrepreneurial, like sort of that sort of thing. Yeah, I just remember being able to really relate to all the characters, even at a young age, like being like, oh yeah, Stanley and I are very similar.
Again, I'm wondering, like, how do you do that as a writer? Like, what are the keys in the text? My cat just woke up, so he has to get attention, or else he'll
That's
die.
valid. I do shrivel like without attention. I definitely
Oh, me
like
too.
turn into a raisin.
This is Texas.
Hi, Texas. This ain't
Texas.
Texas.
Texas Toast. I was using
Oh,
his first name only.
señor.
How do you do that? And it's amazing. How do you put
It
your
truly is. Like the one thing that I keep like in my mind comparing him to is Rick Riordan. I don't know if you've read the Percy Jackson series.
I've
It's
read the
pretty
first one for the show.
well, continue. Finish the
Okay.
series.
Okay.
it's Pre's favorite series. So I didn't read it until I was an adult. And after reading it, I was like, whoa, like something's up with this writing. It's so accurate to this age group. And Pre informed me, like, oh, he's a middle school teacher. And it's like that makes so much sense. And so when I was rereading Holes as an adult, I'm like, this guy has to be involved in a school in some sort of capacity. But to hear that he's not is just like this man is just really talented and perceptive, super perceptive.
I know he like worked in a school for a year in college. I don't know how much he ended up like after that. And he's so good at it, and he loves kids so much. He's like he's again like putting so much care into this. It like it is high level writing, and it's like my personal taste, but everything just wraps up so, it's so satisfying.
It is nice. And like, even as a kid, I think, as an adult, it's very obvious. But as a kid, I can't say that I noticed the Zeroni connection. Like, I think it took me really to the end to realize Hector Zeroni is the great great grandson of Madame Zeroni. So like I think that surprise aspect, that like bundling it up with a bow, is so strong. It makes it such a strong novel. And like as an adult, you hear Zeroni and you're like, oh, it's clicking, you know, like the gears are going very, very early on. But as a kid, that was like way over my head, and I wasn't expecting anything, you know. I was just like, oh, this guy's name is Hector Zeroni, okay.
I'm because it's been a minute since I watched the film, but I'm wondering if like if those sequences are intercut rather than like one happening, because the fulfillment of this promise is that his great great grandfather take Madame Zeroni up a mountain, carry her up a mountain. And so Stanley in the end taking Zero up God's thumb to save his life, basically, of from thirst and starvation, that fulfills the prophecy, you know, generations later. I think it also speaks on such a thematic level of not just like your promise is your word, but like that the special like that it he's helping him, and the fulfill the way to like finally lift the crisis through human kindness, you know?
Yeah, and just like the brotherhood that's formed, like it's cool to note that Stanley Elnatz is an only child, and Hector Zeroni is also an only child, and they end up becoming brothers, and it's almost like they had the real summer camp experience, even though it was like trauma bonding. They really like came out the other end, like we're brothers now, to the point of like they're actual brothers now, you know? And like Stanley says that, like on the top of God's thumb, he's like, you're my brother, man. Like, are you kidding me? It's so sweet. It's so heartwarming.
Oh, I like that didn't hit me a lot until right now as an only child. That, yeah, that's really powerful. Yeah, by the end, so this is not in the movie, I think. At least not to the level of description, like we were talking about, that you know puts them in their position. Hector, you know, doesn't have parents, was living on the streets. Hector was just abandoned by his mother on a playground that he stayed on for a month. He lived on a playground for a month, and then it ends up like going. He's not into the system until he steals the shoes, right? That is the thing that puts him, yeah, because we discovered that Zero's only been there for like a couple weeks earlier, like more. And I think that was such an interesting moment in the book that has you just like on a reader level be like, oh, the characters in this world that have always been here in terms of Stanley have their own stories going on. Like, I
They
think that's
do.
a big thing for kids to learn, and that your assumptions about someone else may be completely false. On just such like a basic, I think it's also like critical thinking and like, you know, these sort of like scholarly concepts. But I'm starting to go through my tabs. But chapter three, page six, Stanley is in the bus to go to Camp Green Lake, and then he, like you said, he really does have a summer camp experience. Summer camp was really big for me. But he's describing the bus. There's a guard sitting next to the driver. A rifle lay across his lap. Stanley was
Hashtag
sitting,
Texas.
yeah. Hand Stanley was handcuffed to, and I think we find out later the drive is like 4 hours.
Yeah, it's a long ride.
And that's page six. And page seven, like you said, in the book, Stanley's overweight. Not only is he bullied by students, which I want to come back to about that one guy, his math teacher like weighs him in front of
Yep, in front
class.
of the classroom and says, like, this girl, you are three times the size of her. She is one third. Like, this is how you're learning fractions.
Fractions. It's heinous.
Oh, that's enough. Like, if that happened to me at school, done. I'm not going to school again. My mom is going to be up in the office. Like huge things. It's just that poor child.
Exactly. And that's page seven. That's not even anywhere near the worst thing that we're gonna get in this book. And I it is like to a degree, like I'm thinking back to that article being like Disney hid a lot of the details of this and being advertised. Like, how do you sell this as a kid's book? Of like, it feels so radical that like this is a beloved children's classic that you read in school, that you read on your own, that there are Disney Channel movies about hard manual labor for children in the prison system, and it's hot. Just and he has this one bully that I don't think is in the movie. I think that's sort of one of the only things that are really taken out. When he gets assigned this new lawyer, she does the most basic level of detective work. She goes and Stanley gives his alibi. I was like getting my head dunked in a toilet. And
Yeah.
she goes to the and asks this guy and finds out, and like one witness finds out it's completely impossible that he could have committed this crime that he always says he's innocent of.
Right.
And you didn't have to be here for like, I think it's like 45 days at some point when they mention it. So, you know, 2 months. And he's sentenced to 18 months of this.
Yes, truly.
That's insane. That's a jaw-dropping point. Page 13, he's arriving at Camp Green Lake. He has to remove all of his clothes in front of Mr. Sir. And then Mr. Oops.
Bandanski.
Pandansky. And I can never remember that actor's name, but he is in a lot of Coen Brothers movies. And again, like perfectly
Yeah.
cast.
Yeah, oh, I got to work with him actually shortly after working with you, and it was in, have you seen the show George and Tammy?
I know it, but I haven't seen it. Yeah.
That man can sing. Pandansky can sing, let me tell you.
Oh man.
Just a fun fact for you. Perfectly cast.
Perfectly cast. And like you said, there's like not only from him, but also from the warden. And I don't think there's like psychological manipulation that is like,
Absolutely.
okay, it's cold to use it on another adult. It is cold to use it on a child.
Yeah.
And I think the only one who like doesn't have that is Mr. Sir. And I think that's mostly just like he doesn't have like the intellectual capacity. I don't know. He's just kind of mean.
He
It's
is mean.
my
I
reading.
think the one time, which like you could call this a mind game, you could also call it a physical torture game, when he gets punished due to what he blames Stanley for, when he gets scratched across the face because he thinks Stanley's covering for somebody for stealing his sunflower seeds, he then refuses for a few days to fill Stanley's canteen. So he's literally depriving him of water, which you could consider that psychological, torture. Just like not having the most basic resource handed to you, like being on top of already being thirsty, because that's such a big thing in the book, is how they don't receive enough water
No.
and they're out there in the hot, hot sun.
Multiple times in the beginning, he says, like, you will always be thirsty when you are here. You will never not be thirsty. And they talk about the shower, and you have like 30 seconds of hot water, but you're too tired. The constant refrain of like whatever hole you're on is always the hardest. It's hard every single time. It's like it's brutal. And yet it's almost like it's easy to written to be easy to read
Sure.
for younger. It's what a gift. Mr. Pendanski, when they first come in, says everyone makes mistakes. You may have done some bad things, but you're not bad kids,
But
which
then
is
has the nerve to be like, you're a thief. You're always going to be a thief.
And he, I think, is the first person who says like zero is nothing.
Zero's
He's
got
not a
nothing going on as
person.
his brain.
That's true. That is from the beginning. He's called zero because he's got nothing going on. And yet, and it like it turns really, I think it's at a point in the story where it feels like a little too early. Like that's the thing that like grabs and hooks you. That's the phrase. Hooks you and is like, oh, things are changing.
It's very Stanford Prison Experiment to me. Like, as soon as Pandansky like has this power over Zero, he goes in. Like, he berates Zero. He deserves to get whipped in the face with the shovel.
Oh, everyone, like the just desserts, everyone, not everything that happens to people was deserved, obviously, because it's a story about injustice, but like everything is right at the end of this story.
Yes.
Like the world is gonna be okay.
Yeah, because it eventually turns out into to be a Girl Scout camp, which is such a sweet, like a sweet connection for Mr. Sir the entire time, saying, this ain't a Girl Scout camp, this ain't the Girl Scouts, and when the cars are coming down the road, that's not Girl Scouts selling cookies. Like, the whole mentioning of the Girl Scouts over and over and over for that, for the camp to eventually turn out to be a Girl Scout camp, was really, really sweet.
I'm a lifelong Girl Scout, huge fan. I always it's always hard for me and my little fingers somehow. This one
Aw,
struggles.
is it not? It doesn't like to attach.
It kind of shakes.
Aw,
I have a pinky that is
yeah,
just always crooked.
she a little crooked.
It's just like
I got
that.
hitchhiker thumbs.
Oh, I feel like that's gotta be helpful for something
It
like
is.
slingshots.
It is for giving directions. As a kid, my best friend growing up also had hitchhiker thumbs, so our favorite like little thing to do to each other was which way to go? That away. Because you're pointing in both directions. I don't know. It's silly.
Oh, one day I was in high school and I was like about to leave for school in the morning, and somehow it was like related to the conversation, but my mom goes, "You have lava lamp thumbs," which I kind of see
Whoa, yeah, I know, I
it.
100% see it. I was
I
like,
have to
what does
remember
that mean?
to
And then
put
instantly
this
knew what it meant.
My thumbs have like a cinched waist. They have like
Yeah.
a really the wearing a corset.
I
I don't know how that happened,
like
but
that.
it feels elegant. Yeah, you have a little bit.
Ew, mine looks, don't look at
Okay.
that. Stop looking at my thumbs.
Oh, stop. But again, like I'm looking at the introduction of there's so many times that I just say, but again, which is fine. Don't be mean to yourself.
Yeah, be kind to yourself.
The warden is introduced, and she again goes, "Excuse me, excuse me." She like belittles the two figures of authority in front of the kids so that it puts a wrinkle in their relationships with them, and then makes both of the Mr. Sir and Mr. Pandansky's jobs harder because these boys, like, they see them as buffoons, which they kind of are. And she goes, "Mr. Pandansky has the water truck. Pandansky, I can't not do that." The warden says, "It's hot and only going to get hotter. Now, these fine boys have been working hard." My emphasis on the fine. "These fine boys have been working hard. Don't you think it might be possible that they might have taken a drink since you last filled their canteens?" And she's pushing Pandansky again and again. Like, "No, give him a little more water. Why don't you want to give him a little more water? He's working so hard." It's just one of literature's great villains. Like,
Yeah.
I just.
And then she pulls Stanley in.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's like,
She.
come here, caveman. And
Yeah,
she like
come on.
calls him by his nickname, makes him feel real comfortable. And
She
she's
called
like,
them all by his their nicknames. Yeah.
yeah.
A little bummed I didn't like grow up watching Holes, because it's such a great movie. I'm
Yeah.
bummed because Sigourney Weaver in that movie would have broken my little brain. Like, a switch would have been flipped earlier, But I think it's like it's because she has so much power and
Yeah.
she like relishes it and will keep it. It's delicious. And the red
Yep.
nail polish having snake poison in it.
It's
Yeah.
the vibrant color, but also when it's wet.
Yeah. Or it's the lizards.
No, you're right. It's rattlesnake
Snakes. It's
venom.
rattlesnakes. And then there are the spotted lizards that
Yeah.
are at the camp. You're absolutely right.
Which we need to talk about.
Oh,
We
yes.
need to talk about the yellow spotted lizards. The black teeth. The white tongue, the red eyes, such a cool description of a lizard, always having 11 spots. And if you're close enough to count them, you're already dead. Like, come on. That's
I
such a good,
know.
like, creature, especially because it's like not something like massive. It's something small. It's a little critter. There's a lot of like power in little critters, you know? Like, doesn't matter their size, they're still gonna kill you.
I love that he repeats the way he talks about it with like red eyes, black teeth, white
Black teeth.
tongue. And he repeats the phrasing of that description and writes it in a way where it feels like someone's whispering it to you, like where you feel like you're at a campfire,
Yeah.
which is like, Lewis, that's so good. That's.
I don't know if you picked up on it in the movie. It had me kind of cackling when I watched the movie because they're very clearly just bearded dragons, which are some of the most gentle
That
lizards
makes
around,
sense, yeah.
and the spots are like clearly painted on, and it's such a
Oh.
cool design, but it's like movie magic, man. Like, you wouldn't, if you weren't like an animal nerd, you wouldn't be like, or an adult, like if you were a kid, you're like, that's a yellow spotted lizard and those kids are in so much danger. But like, as an
Yes.
adult, you're like, this is so goofy. Those are just some bearded dragons like chilling.
Which I also love of like the parents are gonna have a great time too. Like,
Yeah, the parents are giggling while the children are like scared.
Yeah, I mean like
Stanley.
the danger feels so much realer. And I think it's because it's like compared to what other like Disney movies and other kids' books talk about it, it's so grounded in the real world and realism, even though there are these tiny fantastic elements. So to have like this is like this is the scariest one, I feel like. And it's also the realest one, and maybe that's because of the other one, but like it's and the he keeps raising the stakes. You're so good.
Lewis, a king.
Oh, there's the moment with the sunflower seeds. So the kids take a bunch of sunflower seeds. It's Mr. Sir's snack. Ends up when he like Mr. Sir arrives, I think Stanley is literally left holding the bag. And all of the boys sell him out. Armpit says, "Hey, caveman, how come you didn't share any with us?" X-Ray goes, "That's cold." Magnet said, "I thought you were our friend." And yet, like, I also kind of can't blame them for doing it because you know he's gonna get, like, I think he has to dig two holes tomorrow or something. Like, you're going to be tortured. So, like, I kind of don't blame them. And I don't really remember how much Stanley even blames them because then that scene, amazing, goes straight into the rattlesnake venom scene with the warden.
Yeah, and I think probably some of the heat, like probably some of the anger came off of Stanley a little bit when he returns back to digging his hole. He comes to find that it's already been dug by Zero, and he realizes like, oh wait, we're connected in some sort of way. Like we're buddies. We were meant to be buddies. And that's when he finally like decides like to teach Hector how to read. And it's just such a simple gesture. And this is also when you're kind of hinted in to maybe Hector has some sort of connection to why Stanley is here, like why Stanley got, sent to this imprisonment. Yeah, this is like a real pivotal part of the movie and book.
And talking about not being able to read, Zero is, oh, it feels like a dirty word. Zero is illiterate. Stanley teaches him how to read and write. Incredible that you're writing about that for kids. At the same time, kids go through that. So what a gift to them. What a gift of empathy and learning. What a gift so that one kid may be able to talk to another or someone and say, "This is what I have. This is what I'm dealing with." Just so incredible. Like on so many, it's like it's such a gift. It is such a gift. That's the thing I keep coming back to with these books is like the ones that stick with kids are the ones that feel like gifts.
Like how difficult it must have been to one ask for help. But the way that it's written is like totally normal. Like kids just ask other kids for help. And even though Stanley didn't say yes at first, he does eventually like come around and teach him to read. And you come to learn so much about Zero in their friendship growth. One of those things is that like Zero's really good at math. So like just because I do think that literacy is such a superpower, being able to read, like I think gives you endless knowledge in a way. But without being able to read doesn't mean you're nothing. It doesn't, just because you can't do one thing doesn't mean you can't do so many other things. Like Zero is better than Stanley at math. Better than I am at math. Like Hector Cerrone can count some numbers. He can do quick math. He's very smart. He's very good with his hands. He's the fastest digger. Like I think that he's way smarter than he is given credit for. And like you come to learn that through reading the book, obviously, but I loved watching Stanley learn that because his first introduction to Zero is his name is Zero because he doesn't know anything. Like, this is a dumb kid. But then you get to see like a child, Stanley, give another fellow child grace. And it's really sweet to like watch him be patient and then come to realize, wait, everybody's wrong about you. And I see the real you and I got you. It's really sweet to watch their friendship grow and watch Zero just become more comfortable being himself around Stanley as well. Like not talking to anybody, but he talks to Stanley. It's just so sweet. It's like little brother vibes.
Yeah, there's such kindness there. I think there's he has like a moment of consideration of maybe I'm not going to teach Hector this, but it is such like an act of like there's some line of like the space is hardening him. Being in prison is hardening his heart. And Hector asks for this thing, but sort of the gift in return is friendship, and that like Stanley gets to stay a little human a little longer. He doesn't have to break off another part of that heart, of that ability to love. It's amazing. There's a line like really to that effect at some point, but just incredible. Yeah, I drew a blue heart next to when the boys dig his hole for him.
Yeah.
Me and Giselle. Forgot her
Villa
name.
Lobos.
Yeah.
I think one really cute thing that because like in Stanley's older than Hector. So Stanley definitely like steps into an older brother sort of role, even though he's an only child. So he's kind of like figuring it out as he
Yeah.
goes along. But I think one thing that is really sweet because it to me reads as like dad vibes, if not older brother vibes. I never had an older
Yeah.
brother, so like this is just a guess. But when Hector is severely dehydrated and they're climbing up the mountain to get to water, Hector says that the one thing that he wants to eat is a hot fudge sundae.
Yeah.
And Stanley repeatedly is like, at the top of the mountain, there's a hot fudge sundae. Like I'm gonna get you that, which is like such like a kid.
Yeah.
If someone told me like you just gotta walk this far, I'll get you a hot fudge sundae, I'm there. You know?
I am still that way with frozen yogurt.
Just like a such a good
Yeah.
motivating factor. But for him to like remember that, and then even when he wakes up and he's handing him the onions to eat.
Yeah.
He's like, "What is this?" And he's like, "It's a hot fudge sundae. Just eat it." Like it's just like such like a cute little banter moment, but in such a loving way that's like
Yeah.
heartwarming.
When they are on God's thumb and they're first getting there, the way that Stanley gets water for Hector is by digging a hole. And
Digging
it's
the hole.
all full, and I think it's all full circle, but I also, he's digging it with his hands, right?
He eventually goes back for the shovel,
Oh,
but at the
yes, like halfway
start.
back down. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like impressed. It's so sweet. He's impressed with how far he had to walk. Like when he,
Yeah.
so at some point when they're climbing up the mountain to get to God's Thumb, they drop the shovel and the bag that contains their empty jars. And when like Hector is like down and out, so Stanley doesn't want to leave him. So when finally Hector is like awake enough, Stanley's like, I have to go get the shovel. And he's on in this journey back down the mountain to get the shovel where he left it. And he's so shocked by his own achievements because he's like, I don't believe I would have been able to carry Hector this far. Where is the shovel? And then he looks further down and sees it. So it's like, dude, yes, you can. You can
Through
do
the
so
power of
much more.
love,
Yes,
yeah.
you can do so much more than you think you can. Like, it's such a cool testament to being like if you know someone you love needs you,
Yeah.
like your body's gonna do it. Your body's gonna be there. You're gonna have the adrenaline, you're gonna have the passion to get you
Yeah.
forward. And it is surprising. It is shocking to be like, whoa, the things you can accomplish for love.
Yeah. There's an element of that with the holes is like, and I think Stanley maybe comes to this or it like gets easier, but he's like, this is like, I couldn't do this before. I couldn't dig a hole before and now I can. And like, I have, you can do things that you once thought were impossible. And I think that's like, there's a degree to which like, obviously it's not like a wholesale condemnation of the prison system because in the end like it did build their character, I guess, like it did do that, which I think is like I'm reading a lot of, this is a big swerve, but I'm reading a lot of like religious texts written by women in like the medieval era, and in a lot of them they have to be like, but I'm just a stupid girl, like, and punctuate it like that so that it can like still get through, which I feel like, what are, but that's in the novel, but could you like sell it that far? Is also Lewis like, I only have so much to do here, and maybe that's a little out of my depth. I don't, it's just so good.
He's such a talent, and it was such a joy to read. It was also such a joy to reread because as a kid, I don't think I mentioned this earlier, but after reading Holes, I started picking up like reading again. So at that point, I started getting into just a whole bunch of random books. I'm trying to think, there was one book after reading Holes I read that I was like, it was called So Be It.
Oh, writing
And
down.
it was like I just book after book started like finding these amazing like hit, you know, like I was like, I just fell in love with reading again. So like I had my time as a kid. Like I loved going to the library with my mom and then fell off. But then Holes brought it back, which is so cool. You know, like I always thought it was like too cool for books at that age. But then you're never too cool for books. Books are cooler than you,
Books are
probably.
so cool. Did you read a lot of books that were sort of like very deep, like rooted in realism as this one is? Did you tend towards the more fantastical? Because I think that was
Fantasy.
like, that was, I think, like a barrier for me reading this is like it's too, it's sort of like I said with the marketing and stuff, it's like too real. It's like it's, too close to home. And that was something in that article, like Lewis Sacker was like, kids are really fascinated by prison. Like they want to know about it. And I love that. I love that answer to like the hypothetical of like you shouldn't be giving this to kids. It's like kids have questions. Like let's
I
and
mean,
also, yeah, kids go through it.
from a young age, like how I don't know if you were well behaved, but I wasn't. So like I spent a lot of time in timeout. And timeout for us was many different things. Sometimes it was just like standing in a corner and like looking at the wall. Other times it was manual labor. My dad's favorite was fill this bucket with rocks, go out in the backyard and pick up all the pebbles. And my dad is a genius. I mean, he did it because he didn't want to run over them with the lawnmower. But like, you know, what a thing to just be like, do some manual labor, go fill a bucket filled with rocks. And you know, eventually my sister and I, mostly me because she wasn't getting in very much trouble, but we got smart and we started filling the bucket with like really big rocks at the bottom and then a tiny layer of small ones at the top. To which our dad said, "Okay, no more rocks. Fill this with acorns." So that was
Dad.
fun.
Oh my
It was like a
gosh.
beach pail. It was not like, don't think like giant bucket.
Yeah,
It
like Home Depot
was
is
like,
what I'm
yeah, it was
thinking about.
not one of those size buckets. It was like, you know, like you'd build the sand castle with this huge
Okay.
pail
That's
of
good.
acorns, which as children, this has nothing to do with holes. I'm sorry for
That's
the
okay.
derail, but we had three boys that lived next door to us, and it was like constant antics. So whenever we did get in trouble and we had to fill these buckets with acorns, we dumped them over the fence into the neighbor's yard. And then when we had enough of a stockpile of acorns, we'd have acorn wars. And we'd divide into teams. We'd have like 10 minutes to build our bases, which were just like wagons tipped over and like sleds from, you know, the winter time. And we'd like construct little forts and then we'd just pelt each other with acorns and come home with welts and
That's the most beautiful thing I've ever heard.
feral children.
I was an only child and like I really did not. I moved after second grade and I like really did not have kids to like play with in my neighborhood. So that just sounds like a dream.
We like, you know, we did not grow up with a lot of money. So could relate to Stanley with that again. But so we just got really creative. Like, you know, like we made acorns fun. We this is kind of traumatic. We used to play dodgeball a lot, with like a couple kids in the neighborhood as well, but nobody really had like functioning balls. And so like we'd be playing with like a busted soccer ball, a football, like and they would fill with water because we'd leave them outside and then they'd freeze because it's New York and we'd just be pelting each other with like ice balls, like coming home just like bruised. I think I
That's
don't know how I
bad.
made it. I don't know how I'm alive. Childhood was wild, but like
Damn.
having the most fun. There was nothing more fun because like even though you got hit a couple minutes later, you got to whale that ball at somebody else, you know?
Man, I'm so fascinated by like play and
Yeah.
forms of play, especially like when you are, and I don't want to be like back in my day, but I don't know how much kids are getting out to like create with their surroundings and like
Yeah.
have to play of like, and this is gonna have to pretend to be this, and we're gonna have to pretend to be witches. Like I love that every time a guest comes on and right before we start recording, I say like it's sleepover vibes. And you told the sleepover story, and I've recently been thinking like, oh, in like movies, girl sleepovers were like jumping on beds and like tossing pillows and stuff, pillow fights. And that was never my sleepovers. Mine were we would bring a ball of yarn and then shoot it around the room and like hook onto stuff. And then we would pretend they were lasers and we were spies. And you have to navigate the yarn. So, like, their parents would come down in the middle of the night and, like, physically, you cannot get to the kitchen unless you want to be an acrobat. I'm so sorry. And I've been thinking about that a lot lately. Like, I just like, I don't want to go to grad school, but I want to learn about like the Wiggles documentary shows that like those guys really care about like finding out how kids learn and how they play and how we can help them like get to a certain goal. That's fascinating. Am I like contemplating a big life change? No, but
I support it.
let's try this one a couple more years.
Do you want to be the fifth wiggle? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, it can't be the first female Wiggle that's been done. I'm just kidding. She seems great. I don't know. And how much of it is like just completely, and this is not a bad thing, just completely self-interest and just like I want to learn about childhood because I was an old person then. Like I felt a deep need to be serious all the time. And I also just like I encourage everyone to like play if you're not doing it now. And like I'm still figuring that out, but
I will never stop being a child.
you said constant antics earlier about you and your neighborhood kids, and I was like, yeah, that's Corinne.
I've like at work have been called Karenis the Menace, just because it rhymes with menace, but I genuinely love to just turn things into a game. I love games. I have a lot of downtime at this job that I'm currently working at. And so I've like taught myself how to spin a basketball on my finger. I'm like just anything that I could do. I like made a really nice tape ball and then put point labels on different things that I could throw the ball into. And like, I've been like, hey, you think you could score higher than me? Like, I try and get my coworkers in on it, and they're all like, trying to do their job and stuff. But I just love games. I love goofing.
You bring so much fun to life. Like, it is truly a delight to be in your orbit.
Oh, thank you. If I don't have that though, like, I'm miserable. And miserable Corinne's not a vibe. Like, you don't want to be around them.
Your partner laughing.
That was a cough. But yeah, back to me being a vibe. No, just kidding. What's your next tab?
My next tab is when Hector and Stanley come back to camp and they say, destroy Zero's records. We're going to eliminate all of his existence.
Right, because
And
he's just a ward of the state.
no one cares about him is the quote. It just gets so real.
During this time, this really stuck with me when they're talking about the boys potentially dying because of the yellow spotted lizards. Granted, Stanley would be an issue because like people will come looking for him. But in terms of Hector, they're like, just choose a grave. Like, we're surrounded by them because these are 5 foot holes that could fit bodies, very easily. You could get away with hiding a body out there. And Hector would be the perfect body to hide in their situation. And they use that knowledge and power to their own advantage, but it ends up coming and biting them in the ass. So,
I think you mentioned it earlier, like Pandansky says he's nothing. Like he's not a person. I don't know if that's the exact wording, but that like repeatedly Sacker gives you that idea. And I feel like there's a degree to which like kids can hear these things, kids can think them these things to themselves. And this story and Sacker kind of like puts it in the circumstances where it pushes that idea to like the furthest extreme of like no one cares about you. To put the stakes there, I guess, for those ideas. I think it helps you put voice to that, like to the point of Barfbag is the kid who leaves right before Stanley gets there and opens this spot. He steps on a rattlesnake, and late in the book, Zero says he did it on purpose.
Yeah, he took off his sock and his shoe.
He took off his shoe and and they're talking like Stanley goes after Zero because Zero runs off into the desert because things are so bad at Camp Green Lake and they meet up. Stanley finds him and Stanley says, "You'll die out here." And Zero says, "Then I'll die out here."
Yeah, like I'm
Like,
not going back.
yeah. And
He'd
it like,
rather die than go back to that awful treatment, and you can't blame him.
and those two. those two moments of Barf Bag did it on purpose and Then I'll Die Out Here are on the same, they're next to each other. You see them at the same time when you're
Wow.
reading it. It's I think that's also like an incredible thing that Sacher does, is like pair those, and in the movie too, pairs these ideas together, usually through storylines, but even in that one tiny moment of how things continue to happen throughout history, how patterns continue to repeat and they're within the same family. It's fantastic. And then at the end, things get righted, you know, things get better at the end. And they're brothers.
Yeah, it's so heartwarming. Like, it's like, yeah. Like, it's one of those moments where you're like, hell yeah. Like, get him.
Yeah, like everyone gets their win. There's
Right.
no sense of like, oh, well, that would be too far. You know, that would be beyond belief. Like, no, everyone gets it. Like, their dad, I wrote it down somewhere. The fortune is like $20,000, I think. Yeah, it's $20,000 that's cut in two, which is $38,000 today.
Yeah.
And they say after legal fees, all of the deeds and trusts and stocks, Stanley and Zero each received from that less than $1 million, but not a lot less. Like every end hit, the shoes become wildly popular and they're in a commercial. Or no, the guy who had the shoes, that's the reason they're both in jail,
Clyde Livingston.
is hanging out in their living room. Like every win is like to the biggest extent it can be, and
Right.
that is like we don't get to have that often, I think.
And what's really cool is that the timing. So they Lewis talks a lot about the timing of the very same moment that it was when they got to God's Thumb and Stanley sang the song and they ate the onions and drank the water is the same moment that Stanley's dad, Stanley, on the nets, like combined the peaches and the onions to make what we now know is sploosh, which is comes from Hector just randomly calling the very old 100-year-old spiced peaches sploosh, which gave him life, you know, like at that
Yeah,
time, like they saved him,
it did.
and he's just like a kid, like, oh, that's just sploosh, you know.
Yeah,
It's
because
now the name of a brand that's huge.
yes, everybody wins.
Everybody
Like,
wins.
it's so good. And like you were talking about the timing, and we touched on this a little bit, like Zero and Stanley, like their quote crimes happen within like 30 minutes of each other and are intimately connected. Zero had only been in there maybe a month longer than Stanley, and Stanley only like got that little bit of extra time because of like a technicality, something completely unrelated to them. Like the baseball season was just like, it was like a scheduling error almost.
Yeah, because Clyde Livingston had to be present and he's a
Yes.
baseball player and baseball season started, so he couldn't make it to court. So it just
Exactly.
kept pushing his court date.
And yet, like when the story begins and our like our conception of these characters begins, they feel it like, and he says it feels like Zero had always been there. It was just like part of it. And they're it's this continuing idea with empathy of just like everyone is a lot closer than we think. And there's so much commonality between people, I think.
And multi-layer there, like also like your
Yeah.
actions have consequences, like even if they're not tangible or you don't see them, like
Yeah.
they do. They have, if we're talking about the events in the book, like Hector simply stole the shoes and then put them, he like felt bad, and so he
Yeah.
put them on top of a car, and the car drove on the overpass, the wind knocked them off. And they hit Stanley in the head.
Yeah.
You don't think about it, but like your actions do have consequences. And even if it's such a simple act of like, oh, I just put a pair of shoes somewhere.
Yeah, and that the
So.
consequences can be visited on someone else, you know, someone completely unrelated to you, a stranger. It's both ships passing in the night, and our family has been intertwined for a century, you know, centuries.
Centuries, yeah.
Yeah, multiple. Back to
Great great
Yamahat.
grandfather.
Oh my God,
Which
so
also is such a goofy, like the original, gosh, his name is not Stanley, it's like Elna
yeah.
something. I am so sorry that I can't remember his name,
That's
but
okay.
his like almost love story with Myra.
Yeah.
It's such a goofy like setup where he basically wants to win this woman's hand in marriage because he has a heart full of love. And when given the option, she gets to choose like who she
Yeah.
wants to marry. She's like, well, which pig weighs more? Like, she does not even care, like, that she
Yeah.
doesn't care about looks. She's just like doing what she's taught, which is what's going to help my family the most. But
Yeah.
like, nothing going on, but like behind those eyes, you know, not a thought in her head.
Yeah.
Which Madame Zeroni tries to warn him about. But like, such is just a silly scenario, and it like is written in a way that like even kids can understand. Like, that's so goofy. Like, why wouldn't you choose love? Why would you use logic? Why, you know? And it just gives like a really good example of like character in that moment. Like, who these people are, what this time period was like, in a way that's like very understandable.
Yeah, there's a degree, and there's a degree of like this, like even if this doesn't happen to you, like you will see these people in your life. Like these people exist. Yeah, and I think that it's also paired with like in a different generation, this beautiful, gorgeous love story between Sam and Kiss and Kate Barlow. That is like it's a touchstone for so many people, that scene of I can fix that. Like a generation of people have that to define love by. And to also know like that you can love someone and actually not know their character. And luckily, with his great grandfather, like he discovers that and then moves on and has a life outside of this person who doesn't have that love. Yeah, it's all so
It's
good.
such a
There's
fun story to read.
it is. It's such a treat.
I think it's so satisfying. I think that's what's one thing that's really cool is like, as a story, when you read it, there's no way by the end that you're not satisfied.
Absolutely.
It's a feel like, even though you're reading about torture at the end, like, it feels so good.
It really does. It feels so good. Is anyone out there not a Holes fan? If you've read it, if you've watched it,
I've never met one.
I've never met one.
When I like I've been reading this book, like I said, nothing has changed. I'm still a slow reader, so I read it over the course of like multiple days just on my way in and out of work. So I'd read it a lot on the subway, and like people would just be like, oh my gosh, I love that book, like adults, and it's just like so cool. Like, and when I'd like put it on my desk at work, my coworkers would be like, oh, I was like so stoked for it. And it's like, yeah, I've never met somebody who didn't like that book or didn't like the movie.
Received the highest honor for children's literature, at least in the country. And I love when something wins it and you're like, yeah, that was,
Deserves it.
yeah, it deserves it. Like, again, everything is so perfect and like just and in just when Stanley and Zero get back to camp, it's the day that Stanley's getting released. And it's again because like his lawyer did this very basic rudimentary level of investigation, but like everything lines, the stars keep aligning. And they just, it's so realistic, and then yet everything turned out beautifully. There's the moments in which Stanley's like, I will not leave with Hector, and within like 2 pages, Miss Marengo is like, it's actually the next page. She says, come on, Hector, you're coming with us. We're getting out of here.
I love how much he loves Hector. Like, I love their love for one another and how like instantly their rider dies. He's like, I would rather stay at this camp digging holes than leave without my brother, who I met 2 months ago.
There's just like, I think also like Zero is an exceptionally good kid. And I think
Oh,
also
yeah.
like at his heart, Stanley is as well. Again, like it's what Mr.
Yeah.
Panjansic says is like, these are not bad kids. He's a
No.
bad person, and we get there. But like these are again like people in prison can be good people. Like there's humanity even in the darkest of places, and especially in the darkest of places.
Yeah. And they t really touch on like giving people grace, even though they don't like deliberately say it. Zero can't wait to be reunited with his mom. And like, he's not mad at her for leaving him. He just wants to be with her. And when they do get reunited, the focus is on their love. It's not focused on anybody's wrongdoings. It's not focused on, anybody's behaviors. It's just love. It's just a son like longing for his mother and then finally getting to be with her. And it's just this beautiful moment where we really do need to give people more grace. And it's such a lovely demonstration of that.
Correct me if I'm wrong, even in the interim time, I don't think there's ever a sense that we doubt her love for Hector.
Right.
Like there, and I don't think he ever says that, like the way it's written, we never get the sense that what happened was because of lack of love. And I think like that's it's such a clear mentality that I think is rare even today, where it's just like, I just could not, I wasn't capable of it, and now I am. Like, yeah, like you said, like it's no one's fault. It's just what happened. But it's so bad. But he, all they want is to be loved.
Another good example of like almost blind love, which I love the way that Stanley's mom is written. It's like the way that Stanley's mom has her husband's back after all these years of like failure and repeated failure. She's just like, "You got it, honey." Like smelling all these shoes, like she's a ride or die for him. She loves her Stanley Yelnats. Like, could you imagine being in a home filled with stinky feet, like stinky shoes? Your landlord's trying to evict you because your home smells
It
so
just smells
bad.
so
And
bad.
she's like, I'm not just putting up with this. I'm supporting it because my husband is going to fix this problem and I believe in him like wholeheartedly. Like, she is one hell of a woman. And she was never mad at Stanley, like never once yelled at him. It was just like, we're gonna get through this. And like that's such a strong character trait that I think like deserves to be pointed out. Like, I love the way that Lewis wrote that character because like it's like such a good mom.
She has so much faith in her husband. I don't think either of the parents ever like question Stanley's innocence. There is just an like So in the mom, there is this incredible amount of faith in her husband's abilities and her son's innocence. And I think also in the father, in Stanley, the elder, of like his own faith and that like no matter this curse, I am still trying to do this. There is still some part of him that no matter what believes he can figure this out and find it. It's beautiful. And it to me, it also reminds me of like you were saying, of like he goes up the mountain and then looks back and is like, there's no way I could have walked this far. So something just happened with Corinne's lights.
Yeah, my light went out.
It's spooky and like night colors now. But it ties back to like again Stanley, like I didn't know that I could do that. And that he did. There's such like faith. I think about faith a lot lately just because it's the thing that fascinates me. And faith in other people, I think is like the strongest kind or the best kind or most satisfying kind to me. I love that we get like cowboys and robbers and that like really old West kind of feel. I love that part of
Kissing
it.
Kate Barlow is epic.
She really
She's
is.
legendary. And I like do remember as a kid after seeing and reading Holes, like pretending to be Kissing Kate Barlow, like in play, like with kids, like when we were, running around the playground or whatever. I definitely remember like being confused, is Kissing Kate Barlow a real outlaw? Or is this like she became like canon in my life. Like Kissing Kate Barlow is real. That's not a fictional character. Like this isn't something we made up. It's like, no, Kissing Kate Barlow is real, dude. Because she's so badass and so like, I guess because it was in my life from such a young age, she's completely real to me. There is 100% an outlaw that the only time she kisses people is after they're dead, like after she's killed them.
It's both Annie Oakley and Bonnie of Bonnie and Clyde. But there's like, maybe it's just because we get her backstory. There's like, she's absolutely morally in the right. And I, even if she isn't, we believe it and that she is to me.
Yeah,
You
she's
know?
badass because all of those people that she's like stolen from and murdered, they deserved it. And I don't
Yep.
know why. I don't know their story.
But she didn't do anything wrong.
No.
And I feel like Sacher even kind of has that opinion. She's
Yeah.
just cool.
Yeah.
Oh.
And like the item that they find that sets it all off being Kiss and Kate Barlow's lipstick tube.
It parallels to me with the red nail polish of like you can be feminine and terrifying and powerful and
Yeah,
badass.
sexy and badass go hand in hand, and Lewis knows it, and we all know it.
Absolutely. And I think that's a thing of like, even though I wish I like could have told myself when I was younger, like this seems like it's a boy thing, but there are really cool girls in it. Like I promise you.
Yeah. What's funny, like, to just like, as a general comment on life and queerness, when you mentioned like you maybe would have been alerted to some of these things in your life if you had watched the movie sooner because of Sigourney Weaver, I think I've realized about myself that some of my absolute favorite like characters and movies, I relate so much to like the male character and I like love them so much. It's like I didn't really have a crush on them as a kid. I was just like wanting to be them. And like that's been such like a fun journey for me to just be like, no, you were obsessed with Shia LaBeouf because you wanted to be Shia LaBeouf. You were obsessed with Troy Bolton because you wanted to be Troy Bolton. Like these little things, it's like so fun. Like when I think back on like, because people are always like, oh, like who is your like crush as a kid? Because they're always expecting it to be like some hot girl because of the energy that I give off, which like it was Demi Lovato, but like before Demi Lovato, it was like all these like what I saw as really cool guys. And unrelated, this is what's supposed to be on the back of my light, and that's why it's off. I just noticed it. I was like, oh,
That's why.
yeah, that's why it's off.
Well, final question then. Would you consider it required reading?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
There are two requirements that I think need to be implemented into our educational system. One, in middle school, you're reading holes. Two, when you get to high school, or even as an adult, I think everybody in the entire world should take an improv class. I will let that statement just sit unless you need me to go into a 45-minute rant about why everyone should take an improv class.
No, I think like it can't be like a 1 hour class. It has to be like I did like 10 hours, like 10 weeks of
Yeah, a full class.
I took a full class. That's the class everyone needs to
Yeah.
take, I think.
No, not even 3 hours. That's not enough time. You need to take a 3-hour class that lasts minimum 5 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely.
And everyone would be a better person. So much more understanding, so much quicker, so much more thoughtful and open, so much more creative. I could go on. Do you want me to go
I
on?
mean, I like it's such a crude image, but like really would take the stick out of some people's asses. Like, I think they're just people who like need to like take an exhale. And I feel like theater kids have a reputation. Improv have people like there's a reputation that makes some people roll their eyes. But like it is a practice worth doing and learning at least once. I completely agree. I love that. Oh my
Well, I
gosh.
love holes and I love you and I love everybody that's listening.
Do you have anything you want to plug? I know we plugged your Instagram up top,
Oh my
but
gosh, I really don't. Like, I have, it's kind of sad. I have nothing going on.
I feel that.
Eventually, like deep down the road, there will be a movie with my name as one of the writers. So like be
Oh
ready for that.
my gosh. Congratulations.
My roommate and I are co-writing a movie right now. So that's probably the most like fun and interesting thing going on in my life.
Oh
But
my gosh.
yeah, I can't even plug it because we don't have any sort of social media campaign. We are 48 pages in, folks. So it's still in the works. It's still a baby, but if I had to plug anything, it would be Aaron Ball's Instagram. and
Thank you.
podcasts. You're doing great by listening to this right
Yeah, that's all you need to do.
now.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much. This has been such a delight.
It was so great to just like see your face, hear your voice, but like in relation to me, because not I listen to your podcast, so like I hear your voice pretty often, but it's nice to like, wow, actually,
Conversation.
yeah, chat
Yeah.
with you.
Oh my gosh. Well, let me turn off the recording. Thank you so much to Corinne for this episode. This is our 25th episode. I didn't remember it when we recorded it, but woohoo! Thank you so much to everyone who listens, especially thank you so much to everyone who has been on the show. It has been such a wonderful experience for me and created a lot of new, beautiful relationships and like genuinely such a healing experience. I think for definitely for me, and I hope for my guests. And I just I'm really glad to do it, and I'm glad you're along for the journey. Our next episode is The Tale of Emily Wind Snap. It's a mermaid episode. I really am glad that we started talking about play in this episode for Holes because we next week is a lot about play, which is one of my favorite subjects. And I'm also talking a lot about toys on my Instagram and my TikTok these days. It's also basketball season. That was a bit much. Okay, well, you can find me everywhere at Erin R. Bowles. The R stands for, oh, the Romanov family. My mom is a, has a PhD in Russian and Soviet studies, and some kids had, you know, three bears and Goldilocks growing up, and I had my mother saying, you know, when the Romanovs fled, they sewed all of their jewels and gems inside their clothing. So when the Bolsheviks shot them a bunch, it took a really long time to die because all of the royal jewels kind of acted like, you know, bulletproof vests, but ultimately not bulletproof enough. Okay. Love you, Anne. I really do. I'll see you next week. Mermaids!